drive, I look out the window. It's not right, but nobody says so. We're walking and head to the same pew and hold hands just like we're supposed to. But last night, you slipped on the sofa. And these days, I don't even know you. We fight like hell, but nobody knows when we're wearing our church clothes.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Donald, and thanks for tuning in to Nashville Hits Collecting Dust. I'm so excited today to hang out with Kaylee Bannon, amazing artist, and also host of her own podcast show called This Nashville Life. Today, we get to hear her story, her words of wisdom, and then hear her sing her amazing song, Church Clothes. Oh, and at the end, Super Sit McCarty and I even get her to sing a verse a cappella. Enjoy. Hey guys, it's Nashville Hits Collecting Dust. This is Donald, and pretty excited today. This is like a two for one, Kevin. We have a phenomenal singer-songwriter. And, you know, I don't want to call it a competitor. I don't think that's the word.
Oh, no.
He said it.
I don't think that's the word.
How about a peer?
Let's go with a colleague.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fellow colleague podcaster.
On guard.
Yes. Well, I knew exactly when you released. Told Kevin about it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? Because I had been doing, I don't know, we were up to, I don't even know what I was doing, honestly. And by the way, I knew nothing about podcasting. Still kind of don't. Learning as I go. And then you come out and it's so good and professional and like everything on. And I'm like, I got to step my game up.
Setup is
I got to step my game up. So anyway.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm glad you're in. Your podcast is called
This Nashville Life.
This Nashville Life. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're a pretty good singer. Well, you can't see because it's a podcast. But I'm sure a lot of people already know you, but you're gorgeous too.
That's really nice.
I mean, you kind of got a lot going for you.
I asked my manager, Ryan, I was like, do I need to look cute for this? Because I really need to get my workout in at eight to nine. And I'm good because I'm just way nicer.
Yeah.
When I work out. Are you?
Well, I got up at 4 a.m. Because I couldn't sleep this morning. I had a lot of stuff to do this morning.
Don't let him fool you. He wasn't up at 4. Like,
not to work out.
I mean, it was just because he couldn't sleep.
That's right.
Not okay. Like I uh-huh. set my alarm. No. Like a
he's like doing burpees out in the parking lot.
He's doing burpees with the construction guys.
Well, I am going to Costa Rica this weekend. So
that's right.
Let me throw that in one more time. but anyway, hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Donald.
I don't know how and why we haven't crossed paths.
It's kind of weird sometimes when you think how small Nashville is and then there'll be somebody that you overlap with so much, but you've just never actually met or never actually been at a party together, whatever. Mm. So yeah, I feel like that with you.
Well, we have a lot of mutual friends and those friends are awesome. So you're automatically awesome.
Thanks. I get the pass.
Yeah. You get an immediate straight to the awesome pass.
Yes.
Now, are you one of the few that's officially from Nashville?
Yeah. Well, I wish I could say born and raised.
Okay.
I can only say raised.
Okay.
My parents moved here in the 80s from Detroit, Michigan. My family was in the car business, and that also brought them here. And so I grew up here. I don't remember Michigan.
Yeah.
But I grew up here, but my family wasn't in the business. And honestly, I knew a couple people growing up whose parents were songwriters or who was, you know, kind of knew Amy Grant growing up, but like most people, I mean, we didn't know a lot of people that were in the country music business really.
Really? So how did you get in? I mean, when did you know you were just singing in the shower? And
I
like,
mean, I knew I loved it, but I think because, you know, even just as you were, you know, we were kind of visiting before we pushed record and you were talking about what it's like to walk with people that are kind of on this journey, like trying to make it in the music business. I think you also see how many people don't make it.
Mm.
And so I felt like, okay, I know where the bar is and I actually don't know if I'm good enough. Where I think a lot of people maybe, at least back then, like who lived elsewhere, they just had the dream. They didn't know that much about it. They just roll up in town with their suitcase and they're like, I'm going to make it. And so, I mean, that is one thing that I think a lot about. I don't know why that was the narrative that was playing in my head was you're probably not good enough to make it. And I mean, it has probably taken 15 years from when I started actually singing in public in a more real way. And then the 10 years I've been in the business to finally be at a place where I'm like, no, I think I actually am good enough. There's just a lot of things that determine like six quote, I'm using, you know, air quotes because that's always cool. But, you know, success. So,
you know, I hear that a lot. And actually, it's probably one of the best advices that I've heard on here is, first of all, I think we grow up, especially in this day and age of looking at maybe everybody else. But what is success? It's kind of given to us. Like, this is the picture of success until you actually start pursuing it. You're like, wait a minute. You got to define your own success. What is it? What is success to you?
Yeah.
Rick Huckabee actually told me this one time. It was the best advice I think I'd heard from a music standpoint. And I'm not pursuing music, but I have a lot of people ask me, I guess, because I talked to a lot of you guys what they should do. He said, well, I think Bob Shapiro maybe told him this, but he was like, if you are more miserable not pursuing music than you are pursuing music, then you have the opportunity to pursue music, you know? And I was like, wow, that's kind of profound. But at the end of the day, what he's basically saying is like, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people, I mean, just straight talking, there's somebody out there that's like, I want to just go make easy money.
Yeah.
This is not the path. There are just like a lot more clear paths to paying your bills. But I do think
that's not what I heard. Yeah. I heard you come to Nashville and within about 3 to 6 months, you're making six figures just as a writer.
Yeah, that's what I heard about Airbnb. Just kidding.
Oh, here we go.
Don't get me on my soapbox.
All right, listeners, 45 minute segue. Go.
You get me on my. I've already been down to the state legislator. Don't get me started.
This morning. Speaking of overachieving, 4:30 a.m. burpees with the construction guys.
That's
running the little bit Nashville legislature by 7:45 and then hosting a podcast.
Right, right. The first of
before noon.
Yeah, before noon.
Honestly, before 10.
You should, Mayor Donald Jenkins.
Here's the thing. You can't start any type of platform called Making It Happen and not actually make it happen.
Yeah.
And you can't quit. So I go around. My story a little bit, and I told you, I just wanted to public speak, but I had this limiting belief of like, who am I? I'm not famous. So who's going to ask me to come speak? So I needed a message. And so that's why I go out, and I think that music in general is probably one of the purest entrepreneur cultures out there. Mm. Kevin and I can find a business and sell a product or a service, right? And it's entrepreneur. I get that. Songwriters have to get up every day and create a new product every day and then figure out how to make a living on it.
I think you're like saying it in such a complimentary way about the act of songwriting. But to me, that's one of the most magical pieces of songwriting. And it's really hard to control. Like you can think you're going to go. I just don't know very many songwriters that go in knowing exactly what they're going to get that day. Most people, you kind of succumb to the mysterious process of writing where you make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And for me, that means I walk into the room and I'm like, I wonder if anything cool is going to happen, because you really don't know. Like all you can bring is like whatever you have that day. And then all you can do is be with the other people in the room. So it's really like, anything is possible and nothing is totally possible too. Like it's just when it actually happens and it's great, it feels like magic.
Yeah. And you put it in a very eloquent way. It's a lot tougher than it sounds.
It is. I feel like a jerk whenever I'm like, oh, it's so hard. I'm like, back up. I get to like make up songs for my job and sing them in front of humans.
Right.
This is, reality check.
Very well, and let me put it this way. I feel like I'm an open book. I will claim that until I, because I'll get up and talk. As far as I don't think anybody would really call me shy or not a people person.
Kev,
just sometimes it's really awkward in social settings, and I'm like, I'm carrying the conversation the whole time.
No, if there's ever an awkward situation, it's because people are going, will he shut up? But it was funny. So, but the first time I sat down, I go, I think I could do this. A buddy of mine, Weston Davis, I was like, I just want to try it. Let me just try it. And then I realized that it's actually a lot more vulnerable than what most people would think.
Podcasting?
No, it's trying to write a song.
Oh, writing a song.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's super. I think if you're doing it right, it's really vulnerable.
That's the hard part though. Because you sit there in your head and somebody might come up with something and you have something that you want to say and you're like, no, but that probably is not good. And you like get almost anxiety.
Yeah.
And then, so that was, Corey Crowder used to say that, like, you just got to dare to suck.
Dare to suck. I was going to, my first producer, Paul Worley, would always say that. He'd also say that about singing a vocal too. Like, you have to risk doing something that you don't know. You don't know if you're going to land it, but it's worth trying, you know, same like sharing a lyric idea out loud when you're like, especially if it's someone new or someone you want to impress.
Yeah.
It's dare to suck.
Well, it's easier said than done, but it's a great piece of advice. I will say that like vocally, I did try to land a couple of notes when I was a small child. I feel like a lot of people grew up singing in church, and my papa was a minister of music at a Southern Baptist church.
Really?
And so I grew up going and you know, I thought as a kid that maybe I have vocal abilities until I got up, and either I was going through that transition as a child into, you know, maybe a teenager. And I got up and tried to sing the song. And when I tell you it, my voice cracked the whole time. It was,
oh
yeah, you can say that. I ran off the stage. It was awful.
It was
awful. I don't think I've really sang since. So
how many years ago?
I was six
Donald,
or seven.
That actually kind of hurts my heart.
Like, 6 or 7. Yeah. Ran off the stage out the back. Like horrible. That being said, I knew then though that I did not have a music career. So.
I've cracked one time on stage, like a bad one where it was like, oh, there's no hiding. And I had been drinking wine. It was in college. I was in a girls a cappella group.
Oh, nice.
If anybody was wondering if I'm cool or not, you now have the answer.
Are there videos online I can pull up?
Can we Google that?
I actually don't know if there are any videos, but
I'll do some research.
Okay, good. Lucky me. But I had been drinking wine at a dinner before a performance. And that was like, that is the last time I've ever had wine before going on stage. Like, it was a big, not cute, like, you know, 12-year-old boy voice changing kind of crack.
I love a cappella music, though. I've been trying to get guests to sing a song a cappella. Could this be the episode?
Yeah. I mean, what? I don't know. Sure.
You could do your song like acapella?
I don't know if it'll be as good like that, but I'm not afraid.
Oh, see, I love that. And that's just a request.
I am afraid.
We can actually do it both ways, Kevin, and then like splice it. You know what I mean?
Was it?
Started a
cappella. What was the group called?
No.
The Virginia Bells?
Is it?
Is that it? Oh, I found it. Wikipedia is great.
Oh, pull it up.
Rude.
I didn't.
I would also contest my birth date in Wikipedia.
Suri sent it to me because she heard you say it.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
That's funny. Yes, it was the Virginia Bells. I went to the University of Virginia.
Why? Like, this is amazing.
It was really fun. It was the first time I really had ever sung in public. The moral of my story, we talked a little bit about sort of what you love to do with the podcast and the way that you like to encourage the audience with the stories that you tell, which I'm really passionate about. I probably do it in a less organized way than you do it, but I am the, like, if it's possible to be a late bloomer at something, I will be that. Like, I am just a late bloomer on all fronts, and learning to not despise that about myself has been really good. But the first time I really was singing in public was when I was in college. And so, I mean, I didn't even start writing until I was out of college. It's not a race.
No.
Which is what's a lot of time. I'm like, I want it done yesterday, and it's just, it's not a race.
So many awards they won, by the way.
Really?
So congrats to that. This is amazing. And if you scroll down to notable.
Is there a video?
Well, are you on the Virginia? Is there a website?
There's notable alumni, and we have you.
I honestly didn't even know if they know that I like work in music.
Well, you're notable alumni.
See?
I don't need an ACM. I'm just kidding. I totally want an ACM.
Caitlin, make sure you.
Really want a Grammy.
We have more credentials for Kelly over here. Just making sure.
That was my chair.
That's awesome.
That's funny.
I mean, we could just do a whole show just reading off these awards that you guys won in these competitions.
Oh, that's okay. Actually, so we totally did competitions.
Okay.
And all of those dynamics that they like What's
is this
the
like
movie?
The movie?
It's exactly like that.
Really?
Except the people are less hot. But it's exactly like that movie. What's that? Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect. I will say, and I love music, but everybody in that movie's hot.
Yeah. No, they're all hot.
Yeah.
So I did have, so there was a really close friend of mine that came out of the Virginia Bells. Her name's Mivon Nguyen. She now teaches music in Northern Virginia. But in the fall, I had the opportunity to sing the national anthem at a Titans game. Kind of, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was a big deal.
Absolutely.
And I was like, guys, I've never really done this, like, out, like, I've never really done the anthem like this. Like, what do I need to do? And they're like, first thing you need is a pitch pipe.
What?
Which is like the thing.
It's oh,
like,
that you blow on.
It's
okay,
like,
got it. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Similar to like a harmonica or something. Like, you blow like the note and it's like, ooh, you know, and then right. That's your starting note. And it was totally giving me, I had to like reach out to my friend, like, where do you even get a, like, who had been the musical director of the Virginia Bells, Mivon. I'm like, where do you even get a pitch pipe? But you can get it anywhere, any musical store.
Well, I would just think, all right, let's just take the fact that you're singing in front of how many thousands of people in the middle of the field yourself. But the echo and everything with the PA
it's
system
hard.
Has got to be different in general. And it's not like the national anthem's like an easy song to sing in itself, but
I would say, so the song isn't easy, but the harder thing is that you have about a 15, well, probably not that long. You probably have like a 3 second delay of the information that's coming back to your ears from the stadium. So you have to ignore, which is the hardest thing to do. You have to ignore the sound of your voice coming through the speakers. If you pull up that video, by the way, you will see me stomping the crap out of the ground. Like, I'm just trying to keep in time with myself. Like, I'm sure people were like, what is that woman doing? But I was just trying to like stay with myself and not listen to what was coming back at me.
And not only that, I can say this from experience, not from singing, but like for some reason, like one of the hardest parts, you know, this as a podcaster, it doesn't matter. You could be my brother, best friend or whatever. Just remembering names because it should be obvious. Right. Mm-hmm. And then how many times have you seen the YouTube videos where they forget the words?
Well, so now,
and I'm like,
they actually, at most big sporting events, they will put the lyrics up somewhere because so many people mess up the lyrics.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that just nerves? Is that what it is?
I think, well, there's the thing that is hard about the anthem is you're thinking about a lot of things. Like, for example, one of the things that was super stressing me out that day is they have a flyover from like,
oh, I love the flyers.
I'm going to say the wrong number of like the planes, like F something fighter. Oh,
probably the F-16s. Yeah.
F-16s.
Yeah.
So they're like, look, we need you to be, you need to be finishing the song at this many seconds. And that's when the fighter jets are going to fly over. And so you're thinking like, you're trying to think like, am I going quickly enough that I don't, because the main thing is don't go too slow because then they'll fly over before you're done and it'll mess everything up. So I was like looking for the fighter jets in the distance, like trying to, there's just a lot of distracting things. And then all the like crazy humongous football players that are within, you know, feet of you. And you're like, you are enormous.
It's gotta be an intimidating, but I'm a little kid when it comes to fighter jets. That's my favorite part.
It's cool.
It really is. It's my favorite part of the whole thing.
Well, you got some rave reviews about it. So good job.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
It was really
done.
Fun.
Nicely really done. I you know, it's funny because you do, even singers that do it professionally, Luke, by the way, killed it like at the Super Bowl.
Now that would have been crazy pressure. I can't, you know? Especially because last year, Lady Gaga slayed the anthem and everyone was like, that actually would have been, because one of my problems is comparing myself to others. I would have been all eaten up about, oh, like comparing myself to her performance. And he just went out and he owned it.
He nailed it.
He did such an understated, pretty performance of it. I thought he killed it. That would have been really hard to do.
Well, you know, that being said, most people would at home just go, well, yep, that's what he does. That's his job. He should. It's just
but
not.
But it's actually very different than what he
does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason I say that, I thought when I was asked to read just like a scripture in one of my friend's weddings, I didn't even think about stressing about it. I'm like, yeah, I go up there and I read. This is nothing to going up and just speaking. I can do this. And it was probably one of the hardest things I ever did. I got up there and I was like, cold,
were you emotional?
Sweat.
Oh, no, you were
no,
nervous.
No, it was just reading from in that quiet situation type thing. I'm pretty much better when I improv.
Yeah.
Don't give me a script. Just let me talk. You know.
Or was it
Huh?
That you had the Lord judging you.
Maybe. Maybe. Kevin, you might be on to something.
I don't think
there.
The Lord was judging your reading.
Well, I'm just, you know,
but
something
you do
that
have
you
the pressure
think.
Of like, they're only just, getting married once.
I'll be honest. It was just, yeah.
I better not mess it up. That's I'm going, what I'm always
I'm
thinking when I'm
single-handedly
seeing.
Ruin their marriage. That's basically
it's
what's going through my head.
It all started going wrong when Donald messed up the scripture.
Screw it up.
See,
we're done.
I would immediately
you
go from being like
job.
The good luck Chuck, that's who I am now, to like, no, Donald can never be in a wedding because he will jinx it. That's who I go. Like, how does that happen in one lifetime?
You're way better than Dane Cook.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, that's fun. Well, hey, tell us a little bit about, you know, you moved back from college, you're in Nashville, mm-hmm. and just can you take us from there and your journey to music and then
yeah.
even into starting the podcast?
Yeah.
And then I have these three phenomenal questions I really want to
ask
I'm
you. Yeah, I'm super excited. Well, I would say when I look back on that, a couple things were roadblocks to me. Getting started was just the fear of what other people would think and the fear of failure in myself, like not pulling it off. And so at first, I mean, I remember when I was first back in town, my husband and I would set goals together and it would be like, you're going to make 4 music related phone calls this week. And it was back kind of before it'd be like, so you're going to have to reach out. You're going to have to like cold call like 4 people. And like, whether that was like a venue or whether that was like someone that I heard might be interested in writing. And I didn't have the resources and the contacts that I have now. It was a big deal. Like I was completely unsigned. I had no track record. And so I remember back then it was just hard to get, you got to get the story going and you need momentum, you know, in some form. And so one of the big turning points for me was kind of when, you know, when you hit a spot that's so low that you're like, I'm not even afraid anymore because I just don't know how it could get worse kind of. And it's not to be super heavy, but I had a situation like that in my life with my family, with my brother and some illness that he had. He ultimately overdosed and died in 2008. But before that, he'd overdosed a couple times that were very serious. One was that he was in a coma at Vanderbilt for a little over a month. We thought we would lose him then. And I remember going up on the elevator with my mom to the ICU and being just thinking like, what am I so afraid of? Mm. Like this is what's really scary. And this little music dream I have, like it sure means the world to me, but there is nothing scarier out there than there's nothing out there that's scarier than what's, you know, that's what's right here. And when Grant did pass away in 08, that sort of started me down a path too that ended up changing the course of my career, which was, I was looking at the 1-year anniversary and he struggled with an addiction to opiates. And when an addict is entering recovery, they'll go to 90 meetings in 90 days as a way to kind of jumpstart their sobriety. And so I was like, okay, that's really hard for them to do. And those first 3 months are really critical. So I was like, what if I tried to what if I tried to play 90 shows in 90 days? What would happen?
Yeah.
And then any of the proceeds, like I'd be telling the story as I went, and then any of the proceeds would benefit one of the places that treated Grant while he was in recovery. So in 09, that's what I did. From January 2nd to April 1st, I played a show a day, literally anywhere I could play, I played. And it was all over the country. It was literally anyone that would take me, I would go play a gig. And so some of the highlights from that were I played 2 Hooters, which was really hilarious.
Nice.
I'd played a Wendy's. I played the Davidson County Drug Court. So like people in their striped uniforms, like inmates.
Yeah.
Like crazy. And just.
I'm still kind of stuck on the Wendy's.
Wendy's.
You just said, Wendy's was the last.
Isn't that random?
Yeah.
They had like one that was like out in Laverne had like a writer's night. That's like Nashville for you. Like even the Wendy's is like, I've got a great idea.
That's true.
Let's have a writer's night.
That's true, Nashville.
And right so, there. Yep. There's a way where it's kind of annoying. Like where you're like, I'm actually just trying to get a Frosty and I don't want to listen to anyone sing. At least I think that. I'll walk into a restaurant and be like, shoot, there's live music. We're going somewhere else. Like I can't even, you know.
Can't escape
but,
it.
But that tour, which was called 90 Gigs in 90 Days, it made the front page of the Tennessean. Actually, it was Easter weekend of 2009. And my first producer in town, Paul Worley, he saw that article and he took a meeting with me because he was like, okay, that girl is just crazy enough to make it. And so I think that was the thing for me. It's there's a million paths to kind of getting to the place where you can start writing full time and making a living doing it, or, you know, really kind of be plugged into this community. You know, one of them is just like, I know you're not in music, but it's just hanging with people. Like that's a really great strategy to make your way in this business too. Just kind of hanging out, like being with people, like showing up, networking. But for me, it was just, you know, someone kind of taking a chance on me because they were like, okay, she's definitely crazy enough to, you know, at least try to make it work.
I gotta stop you there for a minute. There's too much. I gotta make sure we didn't miss all of that. Cause there was some just like profound wisdom in there. Well, that last thing,
accidental wisdom.
Well, no,
for sure.
Well, it's funny. Cause I say this a lot too, regardless, just networking in general. I think people always want to go network. And I go, it's not necessarily networking. It's not about what you say or even what you do. The first part of networking is just being seen.
Yep. And just
like, even if you don't say anything, how many times have you been out and seen somebody's face enough times to when you actually do get the opportunity to meet, you almost feel like you know them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's actually
the
first step of anything. It should just be seen, Like, don't put the pressure on yourself that, oh, but I need to go up and say this and do that. Just be seen, which was huge.
If there's no goal, like if there's not an agenda too, I actually think that the network, the hang is going to be like, just go be there.
Just
show
be there.
Up.
And once again, I'm taking it down to the simplest form. Like even if you don't talk to them, like just make a half second eye contact. If you do that 4, 5, 6 times over time, I promise you at some point your calls pass and you'll look at each other and go, Do I know you?
Yeah.
Like, and it's almost that comfort level. And it also takes a little bit of that fear away of like, I just have to be something or say the right thing.
Yeah.
It's basic rapport building. Like you clearly like the same things.
Yeah.
Right.
You're in the same places.
If you're doing the same things. You're like, well, then we probably have something in common. So I feel a little bit easier just walking up and be like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
But going back to, you know, I think we all deal with, you know, just fear in general, nobody's immune to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you put something in perspective that was, I think, I don't want to miss. And that is such a powerful story, you know, with your brother. And then, you know, it's one of those things when you hear it, you know, coming from this side of the microphone, trying to regurgitate almost makes me feel a little uncomfortable, but it's such a powerful story
in
a sense that even you sharing it gives it purpose.
Yeah. I feel that way specifically about Grant, about my brother, is I can't tell his story. Only he can do that, and he can't now, but I can tell my story in it.
Yes.
And I think, you know, it's not always wise to share, like you have to do a lot of healing before you can go sharing a story like that. But I do think now it's like, it can be a blessing to people. It can give, I mean, when I'm honest about what's going on in my life, it gives other people permission to not be okay too, you know?
Absolutely.
So,
and no, thanks for sharing that in a sense that, wow. I mean, that just putting yourself in a place to go, you know, my dreams are my dreams, and everybody's problems to them, by the way, are still big to them.
Of course.
Like even if it's not in, you know, what you would consider the same ballpark of what you've gone through, to somebody who doesn't know any better, their problems are huge, right?
Honestly.
So
you can't have, if the biggest, saddest thing that's ever happened to you is your dog died, that is still the biggest, saddest thing that ever happened to you. And it's super sad.
That's
like, you really can't compare your trials to other people's. Like, it's not about, you know, whose story is like,
that's right.
Crazy.
But you're kind of what you, perspective, what you got out of it. It's like, it hit you. You were like, this is, I can do anything.
Yeah.
Right? Which led to, your 90 days and Yeah. Good gosh. And I don't want to miss out on that either. What if I'm talking to myself right now, because you're actually giving me a slap in the head right here. But I have this guilt sometimes a lot where it's like, gosh, I could, shoulda, woulda, but I don't until I get ready. Mm-hmm. Right. And then it's like, well, if you just did it for 30 days straight, how much further would you be? Instead of just trying to overthink it. Right.
Oh, but that's so hard.
It's so hard. Yeah. But if you thought, if somebody asked you, you know, Donald, if you just did something for 90 days, right, and you sacrificed for 90 days, but I will guarantee you that at the 90 days that your life will never be the same for the better. Would you do it? If somebody actually guaranteed you that.
It's 3 months.
Everybody would answer yes. The reality is that's pretty much the case in everybody's life, and yet we still don't do it.
Yeah.
Change your habits, your patterns, like focus on something for 90 days. I guarantee you will be light years ahead.
Well, and what you just said also about sort of getting ready for things, like I'm like that too. But the 90 days for me was an exception, because I remember the idea came to me in November and we were going to start in January. And I was like, at the point where I have 25% of the dates booked, we're going to start promoting it. We're going to start talking about it openly, like it's happening. So we weren't ready. Like, we didn't have 90 shows booked, but we had 25% of the shows booked. And so we had enough faith to go, we're going to step out in it. And I honestly, I wish I like lived like that more often. Because often I'm like, I want all my little ducks in a row. And like, you know, I want it all to be perfect before I share it. I don't think that's necessarily always that helpful.
Ah, that's just good. In the South, we say we're fixing to get ready.
We always fixing.
I'm fixing to get ready, and then you spend most of your life fixing to get ready. And I say this a lot. People go, you know, it takes a long time to change. I go, no, you can actually change really quickly. What's taking you so long is deciding.
Yeah,
just do it. You know, and that's easier said than done. I'm talking to myself. So
yeah, me too.
That is huge, and I did not want to miss on any of that. I have these three questions I want to ask, but I feel like there was almost so much juice in there that I don't even know where we go from there, Kevin. But thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's a powerful story. I did not know that.
Yeah, thank you.
And gosh, that's huge. Well, these questions are my favorite. Here's the thing.
I've already forgotten them. Well, here's the thing.
Well,
do the listeners know you always, do you always give the questions out ahead of time?
I think we've had one person that actually came with like paper in like one out of 64.
Yes.
That had it like and, ready to go.
Kind of hilarious.
Seriously. And he had a brain injury. So he had to, but we were promoting brain injury awareness like that. His song was about Chasing Memories, which is phenomenal, Brian Allen. But he was the first guest that came in because he had texted me and he's like, no, I really need your questions because I can't remember. So he came in with written answers. But what, the other 90% of guests come in and they go, yeah, I didn't even look at them. That's about right. So
like, it'll be a text message that says these three questions will be asked.
Right.
Like,
but that's okay.
Nicer.
I can relate because I'm more of an improv type person, so I get that. But
more
some
genuine.
People, I think it's more genuine. But you know, as far as comparing, you say you compare yourself to, you don't know the answers to the other guests, but I do.
Yeah.
So me and Kevin get to compare your
answers
to everybody.
So now I can live in major fear about that.
Not to make you nervous.
I keep a stack ranking.
Right. Now, there is no right or wrong.
What if Kevin had numbers that he was holding up like while I was answering and it'd be like 7.5 and then I say something, he's like 6. And then, but I'd be like chasing that 10.
Like a little chart that just flow. It's a dynamic flow chart. Like just,
I didn't want to tell you, but we're actually chatting right here. He's doing that through this computer. Like, he's like,
why did you
do that over here? I'm like,
is that the sound of a toilet flushing?
Body language. 6. Voice tone. 7.
Oh, you got to watch him over there.
Okay.
So, and you never know what's going to pop up on the screen. I'm actually pretty happy with him so far. He's been kind of tame over there.
Yeah.
So.
Don't let him breathe any sort of comfort here.
Right.
Because at any moment,
it could happen.
There's a new segment that might pop up.
Yeah, that's true. I do want to go that one that I just to make you a little bit more nervous.
Okay,
that you don't
great.
Know.
Let's right, do it.
Let's do it. First question.
Right.
So knowing what you know now, I know you like coffee because you're drinking out of this. Which one did you choose?
Definitely not wine.
Definitely not wine. Coffee mug. Perfect.
Yeah.
If you could have coffee with yourself, knowing what you know now, right when you started pursuing music, what would you tell yourself?
Don't chase. Run, but don't chase.
Okay.
I think we talked about comparison. Have you ever heard that quote, comparison is the thief of joy?
I haven't.
Yeah. So you might feel amazing about something that's happened in your life. And then you look at like Susie over there and it's like, but Susie just got whatever. Susie is my mom's name. So that's who's on my right now in my mind. But I think if I can think about the victories that I'm having uncompared to those around me, like that's the sweet spot. So I think in writing, don't chase, like run, but don't chase. So it's not like, oh, that's cool, let me try and do that. And I think I've done an okay job of fighting against that in myself, but knowing that I think that you ultimately will be maybe not more successful, but we did talk about being more fulfilled.
Yeah.
Doing like, and you know, there's that little like, yes, in your heart about something or like a little like alarms are kind of going off like, oh, that doesn't seem quite right. Like, so that's what I'd probably say, run, but don't chase.
Right. Yeah, that's good. And the follow-up to that was a lot of people going, well, you know, how do you know? Especially like, I think in an industry where so many people maybe trying to help, or they're giving you guidance, or they're telling you what you should do or what you need to do. Right. And before you know it, you're getting all these things thrown at you and you're not meaning to chase. You're just trying to take the advice of so many people to make it that before you know it, you kind of forget, you know, kind of who you are. So it makes sense that you have to remind yourself.
That is really convicting to me, especially I wasn't super young when I had my first record deal, my major label deal, but I was young as far as like I was new-ish to the industry, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to be on a constant fact-finding mission. I'm going to take in all the opinions and I'm going to try and learn and really analyze and make decisions from my head. And I actually really think I did a disservice to myself doing that. There were a lot of really great opinions at the record label, but like they signed me because I was doing something that somebody believed in.
Yeah.
And I was doing it alone, you know, or not in a vacuum, but like I wasn't, no. And so I think that I really got upside down trying to please other people, especially like the pressure of like, we need a single, 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 single. And that it's just, that's maybe chasing that other thing that someone tells you is going to work works one time. But I don't think it's going to, even if you got lucky and it did work once, I don't think that's a way to build like a consistent career.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, it's funny because Tom Beaupree was on, he's been on a couple of times, but he guest hosted and we had somebody sitting here that's just getting into music, Belmont student.
Mm.
And we asked him, we're like, what advice can you give kind of thing? And he said, you know, what's funny is a lot of people don't know it, but everyone will tell you like, oh, you need to be more like this person or do these things and do that and the other. And then once you get to a certain level, they're like, well, now you're too much like that person.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't have two of you.
Right.
And they're like, what?
As silly,
you just told me to be like them. Now I'm them. And
it's, yeah, we totally already have one. So we don't, you're not unique.
Yeah.
That's crazy. When I first moved here in 02, I was 14, but one of the first
liar.
I know. So one of the first people I met was, do you know, or have you heard of Cindy Thompson?
Yes.
Love Cindy and DJ. And so, you know,
I was completely obsessed with that record.
So good.
I would sing that a cappella, except I don't know all the lyrics. But
Well, there's a screen there and I can pull them up back.
She doesn't.
So you meet Cindy Thompson.
Yeah. And, you know, she's at the time opening up for Alan Jackson and have What I Really Meant to Say and like all these songs. We are, you know, here's the thing. Not that I was ever really, it was just cool. I'd only been in Nashville 6 months. Right. So it's not like I was used to any of this kind of like, not that I ever really feel like I get used to it. Cause I always think it's great, cool and awesome just in general, but it was like, she's there. Right. But I tell you, it was one of my first major lessons, I think in life, when she decided to kind of, you know, walk away when she did. I'll never forget her telling me, she's like, you know, there's times when I'm on a bus and I see a help wanted sign at Starbucks and I'm just, you know, jealous because it's like, I can't really be who I want, when I want, how I want. It never felt like it was genuinely hurt. And it was, you know, something that we couldn't on the outside looking in really understand because we're looking at it like, you're there.
I mean, you know? I will say, and I don't know Cindy well enough to have ever told her this, but for me, from my perspective and from what I know I'm passionate about, I don't understand it. Mm. Like I look at her making that decision and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But I so respect her, like knowing what was good for her.
Yeah.
In that and going, this isn't it. That's crazy.
It was huge. And that's really where I even kind of started my kind of love-hate relationship with the music business. Let's be honest. And not that I'm in music, but it was like, I'm just such a friend and a fan. I'm passionate about you guys and what you do that sometimes when the business side gets kind of caught up, I just don't understand. And I'm like, I'm out, you know, but anyway, that's great. What about the best advice someone else has ever given you? Now, it doesn't even necessarily be about music, but you've always just kind of held on to and lived by.
Well, it's hard, like the best, but this is a sticky one for me, which is it hangs in my brain. And Luke Bryan and I have the same management team, but also we were on Capitol EMI for like the same record label. But early on, he said to me, I take my business very seriously, but I try to not take myself too seriously. Mm. And that was a really good kind of compromise because I'm really hard. Like I love working. I love working. And I do take my work very seriously. But I think there's a way when you're an artist or like we were even talking about personal brand earlier, where when that line between your work and yourself is kind of blurry, you can take yourself too seriously. Mm. And I think I probably have a lot more to offer people on stage in life when I'm taking myself less seriously. I think that still means I'm really taking care of my business.
Yeah.
But I'm not obsessing over myself as much.
That's good.
In that way. So I thought that was really great. Nice. And it's very him too, but.
That's great advice. And you know, especially when you are talking about, to a certain extent, you are the product per se. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
which is weird.
Kevin tells me, he has to remind me a lot, document. Don't like, you get this sense from whether it's a personal brand, artist, whatever, that you have to perform at all times. And Kevin's just like, just be and then document. And that gives me a perspective instead of me going, all right, now as soon as records hit, I got to become.
Achieve. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just be, don't become, just be.
That's so good. That's so good.
I just came up with that. Record it.
Right.
No, yes. Honestly, though, that is really good because trying is so different than being.
Mm. Well, I say like, when do you struggle the most? And it's like when I'm not like, when I'm trying to make this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just don't do that. Just show what you're doing. Like just document over create. I mean, there's going to be times when it's like a collaboration of everything that you've been doing that you need to put some effort and time into it. But from a day to day, it's just, let me just show you what I'm doing.
Yeah. And this was a little bit of what I'm doing even here with you and have been doing 3 or 4 years ago. This was my solution to my anxiety and fear of social media, blogging and vlogging. See, my anxiety was always about just being me and speaking alone. Right. And it's not because I didn't feel like I had great things to say, but it was this limiting thing of, but who am I? You know, and trying to put myself on a pedestal. So this is why, to a certain extent, my problem solving to this, but I can tell other people's stories and repurpose their message and do it through you, right? Yeah. And still have a voice. I do think at some point, though, I know in my head that it's even creeping in going, at some point, you need to step out on your own as well, you know, but I just love promoting others too.
Yeah, but I do think that's maybe a growing edge is like, believing that your story itself has enough value to share with other people. Yeah,
that's good.
But it does.
It's hard to,
because I heard a little bit about it and it does.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, thank you. And that's, I mean, I learned something. And every time I do this, I swear this is for the audience, but really, why wouldn't I do this? I told, if this whole thing, and this was permission for me to start, right? You said something earlier, you're like, dare to suck. Right.
Said it first, actually. Well, you like hit it on the head.
Some other people a lot of artists, writers have told me that. And that was really, I mean, when you just start a personal brand without actually being something, that's like, all right, I'm really starting from this. I had to get permission to kind of suck. In other words, I needed somebody to go, it's okay if you suck.
Yeah.
Instead of me just saying that.
Yeah.
And so when I got permission to fail, it was funny because I got, the pressure was taken off. But then that perspective was given to me that, you know, if it only changes one life, then it's worth it. And by the way, Donald, if that life is yours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's worth it. And so all of a sudden it took this pressure off. Well, how many people are listening and how many people approve or hit like, right?
Yeah,
and
yes,
how many
yes,
of us
yes.
are now looking at those things going, my value and worth comes from somebody hitting a button.
Mm-hmm.
But really, even me saying this is reminding myself, by the way, if it only changes one person, if that one person is me, it's worth it.
Yeah.
That's really success to me.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, give me 10 more minutes, I'll be over here with Kevin going, but how do we distribute and social, you know? And it's like,
yeah.
You have to constantly.
What are the best hashtags we should use?
Yeah, how do we? Yeah. Oh, don't take me down. That is a deep, dark hole.
Yeah. I know, right?
But you can obsess about all of that.
Yeah.
And there's a middle ground, I think, between
because
like
there is
not
a,
doing
that
anything.
That is a business.
It is a business.
Side, right?
You can't record your podcast and just then not promote it.
That's
like,
right.
We deal with that every week. It's like, but then how much to do so I don't wear my fan out? They're like, well, gosh, is she no longer singing? She's just podcast. You know, like,
yeah.
How do you walk that line? But yeah, and you can totally obsess about it.
She can relate. I love it. That's awesome. And I agree with that in the same way, but profound. I learn something every time I get up. Me and Kevin look at each other. I go, that's just awesome.
Like, no,
we learn something every time. Every time we learn something, we're like,
I feel like that too.
Yeah, it's amazing. My favorite one. You ready?
Yep. No, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. So you have to finish this statement while Kevin gets his camera out.
Okay.
Donald, Kevin, super sick, McCarty. If you really knew me though, like if you really knew me, you would know and finish that sentence.
Can I do two?
Sure.
I'm going to do one lighthearted and I'm going to do one
the more the
heavier.
Merrier.
Is that okay?
No.
Totally.
Okay. We want to actually really get to know you.
Even just saying that, you're moving up the scales.
Oh, yes. Okay. And I'm a people pleaser, so just give me some affirmation. Yes. Okay, the lighthearted one is, I am so messy. I'm so messy. My car is messy.
Okay.
My bathroom right now has everything that I used to get ready to look like this and remotely presentable is out on the counter. The drawers are open. There are three outfits on the floor that I ended up not wearing. And I'm always it's literally always a tornado in my bedroom, my bathroom. It's everywhere.
Total mess. Is your husband the same way?
No, my husband is so organized. Everything has a place. It's always hung up. It's always folded.
I feel like roles are a little ratio wise. Isn't it usually the other way around?
I'm a hot mess.
But
it's
you're not
so annoying.
Dirty. You're just messy.
Okay,
well, and that's actually the big difference is I will be scouring the bathtub because it's dirty.
Right.
Okay.
But I will be completely unfazed by the fact that there's 17 shampoos and conditioners out. Where Jeff's like, get the shampoos organized. Like he's making him crazy.
Yeah.
But he doesn't see that but the tub is dirty. Like it needs to be cleaned.
Oh, okay.
So my counter is not dirty, but it is messy. Do you know what I mean?
Got it.
So that's the difference.
I get it.
And then the other answer would be something that I realized probably right around 30 is that I had spent 10 years, 20 to 30, trying to prove that I was enough. And particularly one that really is just, I mean, all the work stuff and that being good enough and talented enough, but also as a woman, if you don't know in your core that you have value and are beautiful from an important male source in your life, like your dad, let's say, if that is a question mark in your heart, you're going to try and get that answered from every man you interact with until you implode or until you do the work and work through it and can answer that for yourself. Mm. And that was a major, major, to this day, if someone compliments me on my physical appearance, I am skeptical of what they're saying because that was such a big part of my story was not having that question mark in my heart as far as am I enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Can I ask, why around 30? What was it that kind of
is
the right way to say woke you up a little bit? What, was there something that
I think that was when I realized, well, for the first time, because of my visibility in the industry, I was starting to get attention for my appearance, which had never been, like, I had never thought of myself as someone that was like, would be noticed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to get attention, and then it started to kind of mess with me a little bit. Like, ooh, like, am I doing this to get, what's happening, and what lengths am I willing to go to prove to whoever that I am beautiful enough or skinny enough or what fit in, like, whatever the fashionable enough. And so that was when I started realizing, like, okay, I think I've probably spent at least the last decade of my life trying to answer that question for myself. And like, it actually shouldn't even be a question. Like, it's not like I got to go do some serious work on my heart.
Yeah.
Because the answer is not going to come from an external source. You know?
That's so true.
But that was a awesome. Big one. Sorry. Like, that's probably not what y'all are normally looking for.
No, that's actually exactly really what we're good. Looking for. Because I'll be honest, that's not just a girl thing. I mean, guys won't probably admit it, you know, without really some prodding. But I work with a lot of high school kids, and I have heard stories after stories after stories of something that was said 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one comment that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, who knows what the situation, it could have even been in someone take it out of context the wrong way, but yet will still stay with you. And in a much deeper level, but, John Acuff, I always refer to this because it's so true. His critic's math, it's called 10,000 compliments plus one insult equals one insult.
Mm-hmm.
And even to this day,
yeah,
10,000 people can tell you you're gorgeous, and one person goes,
mm-hmm.
and that's all you think of mm-hmm. and obsess of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes for all of us, guys and girls, believe me, and especially, you know, there's a lot of different, I guess, perspectives, but if there's one thing I just want to kind of reiterate on what you said, I don't know if it's possible to reach your full potential until you know exactly who you are and what your worth is.
Mm-hmm. And that's an inside job.
And that's an inside job. And, yep. and so like, that's why I was asking, like, what kind of woke you up? Because at the end of the day, we're always going to be able to find something, someone, somebody's doing it better or more.
Yeah,
right?
for sure.
And so how do you wake up to the fact that, you know what, here's my worth, here's my value. Now my expectations change.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the whole point. It's not that you get better or worse in your skill set. It's just that you have this reality check, you know your worth and value, and therefore your expectations change. And,
yeah.
and now you can actually go be you.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know if I have the exact answer for everybody that's listening on this is what you should do, but I'm just saying, figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, find out.
Yeah.
So
personally, like, I think one thing of there's a million different answers to what you can do to help that process. Like, for me, what I've stopped doing is a lot of picking up the phone and scrolling.
Mm. Ooh. Yeah.
I've minimized that. Like, I still do it from time to time, but I don't do it nearly as much. I think I do what we talked about, right? Like, it's document, right? Versus like just absorbing all of this stuff mm-hmm. all the time. Like, and that's helped me a lot just to be like, what are the things that I need to focus on for me and not what other people are doing? Because then, like, even last night, the Preds had an awesome OT game and I'm like pissed because all my friends are there, but I'm working till 10:30, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
I can't go because I'm working.
Yep.
But I'm like, okay, you know, like, I'm going to make me feel better by not looking at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One small thing.
I think that's just because it's there and it's happening doesn't mean we need to see it. Like, you know, you don't need to. And yeah. I think you have to use wisdom about for yourself, like, what is too much? What's the right amount? And what, you know, no, that's.
Yeah, I battle with it. I think a lot of people do where it's like, why am I posting this? Is what I've asked myself recently. Like, why?
Yeah. What answer's coming back?
Just like, who am I trying to impress? Right? Like, who gives a shit that I'm golfing? So that's why it's funny how I've started to use some Snapchats where it's like just pure funny, stupid stuff.
Yeah. yeah.
Right? Versus like, I'm here doing this. And then I, you know,
find
myself doing it. And I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. And there's a lot of answers to that. The biggest one, I think, just surround yourself around good people at the end of the day. I mean, I have had a ton of great people in my life. And I think when people hear me say that, they go, oh, well, I'm not hanging out with the wrong crowd. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad people or the wrong crowd, But if they're not pouring into your life and challenging you, then what are they doing technically? And I say this from a very, let me just wake you up to a certain extent that like, it's amazing how society, even in sarcasm, is negative. It's just sarcasm. It's not serious. But if you ever notice how if you hang out and all you hear is negative sarcasm and everybody's laughing about it, over time,
it's contagious too.
Over time, like even if it's stuff like, I mean, we can laugh about it all the time, but it's like, oh, I'm fat, oh, I'm you know, and ha ha, you know. But if that's all that's going in,
yeah,
that's what's going to come out. And that's what you're going to think and believe. And, you know, same thing, you know, with social media, but like those people that it's actually kind of uncomfortable at first when you get around people who are actually saying good things about you. You're like, what? Wait, I'm not really used to that. Until you're around it about 3 or 4 days and you're like, God, I feel better now. I don't really know why. And it's because, well, people are just pouring good instead of just always, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really, it sounds very, very elementary, but it's huge.
Yeah.
I can't even stress that. I mean, this is not groundbreaking NASA stuff here, right? Good in, good out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, from the photos, from like what you're seeing, that's what, you know, to what you're, who you're with and what you're listening to and what you're talking about. Yeah.
Well, hey, that was huge. So, God, there was so much in that episode, guys. Y'all might need to listen to that twice. three times if you want to. You know what? Download it 10 times.
And rate and review.
The Survey Monkey will be released Tuesday at 4.
Follow, like, share.
I don't care about... That's you. I'm worried about scores and surveys and scales.
Oh, gosh. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you,
and really just kind of sharing, being real.
It was really
great. Awesome.
We, Kev, thanks.
Oh, my God. This was amazing. Really
My favorite part's coming up now, and we're going to do a couple different things here, hopefully.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a podcast. We can get it like you want. But I do want you to maybe set up the song that you're going to sing for us. Tell us the story, who, what, when, and where.
Well, so... I'm going to be honest. I wish I had done my homework a little bit more because the song that we're doing today, I did not write. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But I think it's still really appropriate for Hits Collecting Dust because these are the kinds of songs that without a champion, and I just happen to get to be the champion in this case because I cared so deeply for the song. Like for a songwriter, it may be the best song they've ever written, but if that song doesn't have a champion, it will never get heard. And honestly, I do think there is something to like the songs that really are meaty and have more to say, they are harder to get cut. Now they end up going on to be the bigger, like that's what goes on to end up being song of the year. But there's, you know, however many other 51 other weeks of songs that were number ones that aren't that kind of a song. So anyway, I often think people will say their best song in their catalog has never been cut. So this song is called Church Close and it was written by Nicole Galleon and Liz Rose in 2003. No, 2013.
Liz
that would have been an even better story though.
Liz has written a few good ones in her life.
Just a couple. And it sounds like you had Easter with Nicole.
Yeah, I did.
So, yeah. So 2013.
Her and her husband are kind of ballers.
It's too bad they aren't more talented.
I mean, honestly.
You know, I kind of feel bad for them. They don't have a lot going for
them. They get by.
Yeah.
You know.
So they wrote this song. I happened to be demoing a song on the same session that Nicole and I had written. And we were our song and this song were on the same demo session. And so here in Nashville, there's like a chart where, you know, you'll have the song title at the top and then we use the number system here for the band to know what chords to play.
Yeah, I've never figured it out. I've seen it 1, 3, 4. I don't know
why.
So
the numbers coordinate to letters that are in the scale. And so it's just sort of a way because so many songs aren't performed or recorded in the same key they were written in because they were written by some songwriters, then this other artist is cutting them in a totally different key.
Okay.
At some point, they've decided to make the notes correspond to numbers so that it's more like you can pick that song up and put it in any key and it's still the 1, 4, 5 chords. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Kind of.
I will say this. It's impressive. These studio musicians, Crazy. You walk in and the guy literally passes around a sheet that has 1, 3, 4, 5, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The first time they look at it, they walk in the studio and nail
it. It's crazy.
It's actually unbelievable. It's,
well, so you'll tell them this is going to be in, you know, in G, but the chart is just written in the numbers so that you could move it to any other key and it would still be those.
Yeah.
It's still going to be the one chord, whatever the key is. If it's in the key of G, the one chord is G and the four chord is, now I'm going to have to like, because I don't do this, I'm like G, right. A, B, C.
Oh, okay.
And then the five is the D, and G, so like that. So then they can pick up and move. Anyway, so long...
It's own language.
It is. But so my song was being demoed right after church close, let's say. And I saw it, just the title written down on the chart. And I was like, Nicole, what the hell is this? I love this title. Like, what is this song? Oh, you know, she's like, it's sad. You know, it's not what you think. And so I'm like, okay. Well, when our song came back from, you know, getting mixed or whatever, I reached out to the publisher and I was like, hey, you know, I saw that Nicole had also demoed this song called Church Close. What's the deal? Like, can I hear it? The publisher's like, well, you know, we kind of have someone in mind for it, but like, we'll share it with you, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And in other words, they had someone way more famous they were hoping was going to cut it than me. And I just immediately, I loved it. I felt like it was so honest and it connected so much with my story. My parents were separated after 40 years of marriage at that moment. And it was just like, oh man, like not only is this my childhood, this is also like just marriage is hard and relationships are hard, or there's all these other levels of like ways that, you know, we wear our church clothes.
Yeah.
We cover up what's really going on, you know? So, long story short, we cut it. It wasn't ever, the record label really loved the song and believed in the song, but it's just so hard to get a ballad on country radio. And at that time they were trying to get Girl Crush up the charts and they were trying to get Mickey Guyton had a ballad at that time too that was called Better Than You Left Me. That was a great song. They were trying to get that up the charts and they were like, look, Kelly, we're not putting out any more ballads on women, like at least not in the short term. So that's never going to happen. And fast forward to last fall, I'm out of my deal and we just decided to recut it and then finally got to put it out about a month ago. So long, that was a long
that's
story.
That's what it's for.
But that's how we got to hear.
This is how that's good ones work,
yeah,
right here.
That's
and
perfect.
I mean, you hit on so many things that I don't think this perspective has ever been given on this show, Kevin, but like, cause we always talk about how many songs we get to hear that 99% of them never leave. We never really give any of the reasons as to why. And she just hit on a really big one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the songs are not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how many different variables are there, you know, that kind of have to play.
Right.
And one of those being, it's not necessarily that I wrote it, but you know, songs need to be with, it's kind of, they have to be with the people that, I don't know. You get a different perspective there that we hadn't even talked about, but that's one reason there. So I'm excited to hear you play excited to watch where this whole thing goes. So we're going to take a break, tune up, and then have you play it.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right. Kelly, you ready?
Maybe.
I think
so. I hope.
Well,
you're going to give me two takes if I mess up?
No, this is the...
No?
This is like the Super Bowl national anthem.
No.
You get one...
Wait.
Yeah, you got to stop at the exact...
Honestly, I was stressing so much about that. And then they were late.
No, I actually have the...
They were late. So like, I was like, did I mess up? Because I mean, I had like timed it. I had like my metronome.
So like right when she's like...
Yeah, you're going to be like...
I wouldn't do the Blue Angels an injustice.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry.
Kelly Bannon, this is Church Close.
Pressed shirt, you tuck it in. You tie your tie, tie it again. I put a little curling my hair, pink on my cheeks, barely there. A proper skirt, it's at the knee. A good sweater in winter green. Shake the keys downstairs. I hit the lights, not a minute to spare. Slip a five
in the Bible for the offering plate. What a beautiful picture we both make. You drive, I look out the window. It's not right, but nobody says so. We're walking and head to the same pew and hold hands just like we're supposed to. But last night you slipped on the sofa, and these days I don't even know you. We fight like hell, but nobody knows when we're wearing our church clothes. We stand up, we sing a hymn, we say a prayer for other friends. We're turned into the book of John, and I'm thinking how I can't go on. But we smile and we give it our Sunday best. If we're lost, couldn't tell by the way we dressed. You drive, I look out the window. It's not right, but nobody says so. We walk in, I head to the bedroom. But you don't, you do what you want to. Like last week, when you packed a suitcase and came close to getting your own place. Oh, that's the stuff that nobody knows when we're wearing our church clothes. Don't speak, don't touch as if nobody's watching us. Lord knows we've got it down. What would they say if we gave up? You drive, I look out the window. It's not right, but nobody says so. We walk in like we've never been so close. Miles apart, but careful that it don't show when we're wearing our church clothes. Ooh. You drive, I look out the window. It's not right, but nobody says so. We walk in like we've never been so close. Miles apart, but careful that it don't show when we're wearing our church clothes.
Yo, I don't usually play that, but like I usually make my guitar players moving to Seattle.
Kelly, that's such a great song. And
oh man, thank you.
Your voice is phenomenal.
Thanks. That's so nice.
You know, there's something to be said. You know, I think there's so many talented people vocally in Nashville, but then you can still hear that one person sing that one song and it can silence a room.
Yeah, that's a powerful thing, right?
And
I think we've all been in those situations where you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I am so excited for you and really awesome. God, thanks.
I really feel like in this particular case, if that's what you mean, it is this song does that.
Yeah.
Like singing it isn't about me trying to sing it like a good, like it just, I just need to sing the song because the song is so powerful. Yeah. But
it is a powerful song and you, you do it so well. So
thanks.
Everything you said today was just awesome.
Oh, thank you. This is really a really cool setting. Like I've gotten to be on a couple other people's podcasts and
be honest. How?
Huh? Ooh. Huh? I just, this was really different and I just really appreciate that.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we try. And at the end of the day, this comes from as much as just being, we don't really know what we're doing, but I just knew that, there's too much out there for it not to be shared.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do the, hey, look at me contest, but the every time I do this, I want people to hear it just because I get so much out of it.
Yeah.
I really cool. do.
Well, it's and like, I think so, there, it's genuine.
Yeah.
Like that's a,
well, will you do me a favor? That. Kevin Super Sick McCarty is also my non-legal counsel.
Okay.
All right. Uh-huh. So that being said, I need to ask a very important question.
All right. Ready?
Okay. At some point, will you come back?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Easy.
Well, just so you
know. Okay. Yeah, no, I loved this. Honestly, I feel like I want to ask you a million things about your process
right here
and stuff.
Sit right here with me, and we do it yes together. It actually
how much
mine
do you pay? I'm totally kidding.
Coffee sips.
I would love that. I would honestly, that would be so fun.
Well, I'd love to have you back as a guest. I'd also love at any point if you want to be a guest host, please.
Okay.
And then ask me any question you want.
Okay.
If I don't know exactly if I'm what you're looking for on your show, but I can try if you want me to be.
Yeah, that would
if
be
I get
fun
the invite, then yes, I would love
that. Actually, one of the things we're thinking about for next season is instead of this like long form interview kind of thing that we've been doing, we're wondering if we're try and tell a different story. Like it might be like, what if we looked at five hit songs and the journey of like how they got cut, and you could totally play a role in that.
I think so.
Cause it'd be like, you know, some of the backstories.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I mean, that you may not want to use this in your, but I'm just saying like,
no,
I would love to think of some other ways that like we're leaving parts of the story untold the way that we're currently doing it, you know?
Mm.
Anyway.
However you need me, I'll do it.
Okay.
Use me.
Also binding hey, verbal contract.
It's on recording.
You guys are both screwed.
It's on recording.
I'm now your legal counsel.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Let's do it again.
Whew. Okay, please edit me out, rambling.
This has been Hits Collecting Dust. Please support this podcast and the artists featured by going to iTunes, subscribing, and leaving us a review.